For decades, the patriots of Eastern Europe fought against communism. Despite the threat of imprisonment and near total censorship, they continued to speak out. They called themselves dissidents. Ultimately, they prevailed against tremendous odds. Now, at long last, American patriots are speaking out against the forces that are destroying this country. This program is the voice of those patriots. This is American Dissident Voices. Your host is Kevin Alfred Strong.
Thank you, Richard Cotton. Today, we will continue our series entitled The History and Significance of the New World Order. Today's program is part three in this series, written by researcher and writer Scott Spencer of Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Let's briefly review what we have learned so far. 1. There is a great deal of misinformation being spread about in the patriotic community about the New World Order. Some of this misinformation is really disinformation planted and spread by our enemies, but most of it is due to ignorance and refusal to face up to the racial dynamic behind the drive for world government. 2. The revolutionary movement to overthrow the existing old order of Europe was essentially hijacked and perverted where it was not actually instigated by organized Jewry for their own purposes. Their part in the French Revolution is well documented. Their dominance in internationalism, both the communist and capitalist varieties, is undeniable. Point 3. The definitive struggle between Western civilization and the New World Order was World War II. Germany and her allies represented the West, while Soviet Russia and her allies, sadly including the United States, represented the New World Order forces, and even referred to themselves as the United Nations during that struggle, before that organization was officially founded. So, now let us begin part three of The History and Significance of the New World Order by Scott Spencer. The modern resistance to the New World Order may be regarded as having begun early in this century, when alarm over the blood-soaked Bolshevik Revolution and its adherents in this country began to grow. Literally hundreds of nationalist, anti-communist, and patriotic societies and organizations have arisen, prospered, and fallen in the past 80 years. Some of them achieved national recognition and had many thousands of members and supporters. Some names you would recognize from your history books, such as the America First Committee and the John Birch Society. Some may be familiar to you from their current shortwave and satellite radio broadcasts, though some of these current organizations have made a small fortune selling quack cures for both disease and subversion, and overpriced precious metals. All have utterly failed to halt the advance of the New World Order agenda, which they claim to oppose. The vast majority of these failures can be attributed to the fact that the patriots themselves accept a large part of New World Order doctrine, specifically the idea of human rights inherent in all beings arguably human, regardless of race, creed, color, sexual preference, etc., etc., until you gag. As long as nonsense such as that is enshrined as sacred truth, the failures will continue. The phrase, "all men are created equal," is one such sacred cow. Its literal meaning must be repudiated by American patriots, for in five short words it exemplifies New World Order ideology. Its origin lies in the 18th century philosophy of the Enlightenment, which first enshrined the ideas of 1. Basic human equality, and 2. Rights which inhere in every human being equally, regardless of the worth or attainments of that human being. The American Revolution may have merely adopted some of the notions of the Enlightenment, such as all men are created equal, simply because these were fashionable ideas at the time, and they were conducive to revolution. The French and Russian revolutions were both carried out by, at most, a mere 5% of the population, the rest of the population being more or less unwilling, but also unorganized, and thus unable to resist. The American Revolution, on the other hand, was carried out by a much larger segment of the colonial population, and may thus be regarded as a genuine middle-class revolution, without any ulterior motive to serve the Jewish agenda. Indeed, insofar as the colonists were revolting against the will of the Jewish-controlled Bank of England, the American Revolution was a blow to the New World Order, though not unequivocally. The Declaration of Independence incorporates that very unfortunate statement, the only statement from that document which the public schools and the Jewish-controlled media have made sure that we know by heart. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Now, it is obvious to almost everyone that individual human beings are not born equal to each other. On the face of it, then, Thomas Jefferson's statement is blatantly and therefore embarrassingly untrue. The fact that Jefferson advocated repatriation of blacks to Africa may give us some insight into his more mature and considered views, but the fact is, he did write that phrase, which has done so much harm to his nation. In those days of the Enlightenment, leading philosophers such as John Locke and Rousseau seriously argued that everyone was born mentally identical. Locke's term for the condition of the mind at birth was tabula rasa, Latin for blank slate. Differences in racial physiognomy were thought to be due to environmental influence over the course of just a few generations. These fallacies, part of the intellectual universe in which Thomas Jefferson lived, were overturned in the early 19th century when the observations of Charles Darwin were published. Darwin dealt a death blow to the superstitions of the Enlightenment by providing evidence that man was part of an animal kingdom in which all are definitely not created equal. Darwin showed that the minds of men are not tabulae rasae. Human motivations and emotions are in fact based on instincts, which are not only hereditary, but differ from one race to another. Even mainstream psychology has had to admit that the characteristics of the mind are largely hereditary, although the politically correct adherents of the Boas school still argue the point. Significantly, John Locke's tabula rasa theory was also the basis of Lysenkoism, the official biology of the Soviet Union, which posited the absurd idea that acquired characteristics are passed on to future generations. This idiotic theory would have it that if you take piano lessons, your new skill will be passed on to your children, and that giraffes acquired their long necks through generations of stretching to reach the leaves. Lysenko was applauded by the Soviets because he held to the belief that environment determines man's nature, and he validated the communist idea that socialism would create a new kind of man. It should be clear to most people that when Jefferson wrote that all men are created equal, he was expressing a proposition which may have seemed tenable to sentimental souls at the time, but was utterly discredited a few decades later. It was, furthermore, written in the midst of a desperate revolutionary struggle with the purpose of rousing popular support. Science, since that time, should have utterly dispelled the belief that all men are created equal in any sense, but unfortunately, because it is a piece of cant which has been enshrined in a holy relic of the United States, it has continued to distort thinking in this country. I say it is a holy relic because that is how people always seem to talk about it, even though the Declaration was not regarded that way until about the 1840s, when the U.S. government bought the document back from a private exhibitor. When Martin Luther King Jr. spoke in Washington, D.C. in 1963, he used the words of the Declaration as if it were a debt instrument, and he specifically referred to it as such. In effect, he was saying, "You claim to believe this, therefore you must act accordingly." I suppose his Jewish associate, communist Stanley Levison, came up with this concept. This is a rather dramatic illustration of the latent destructive power of wrong ideas. The Constitution of the United States, on the other hand, is on an altogether different level. The Constitution was written in peacetime and was based on the venerable political treatises of Polybius and Aristotle. The Constitution of the United States is not a startlingly original document, as our historically myopic public schools teach. It is not true that all men everywhere were slaves before it was written. We are indeed fortunate to have the rights which the Constitution expresses, but that piece of paper did not create those rights, nor will those rights cease to exist if the Constitution is abolished. Those rights are part of the Anglo-Saxon tradition and spring from the soul of our branch of the white race. Our Constitution is, furthermore, similar to constitutions of the ancient white world. The republican form of government is one of the three forms described by Aristotle and has hardly existed outside of the white world except in name, because it presupposes a self-discipline and independence of thought which are characteristic primarily of our race. When the republican form is transplanted to Africa or Asia, it simply does not work the same way. Witness Liberia. Witness the Philippines. French psychologist Gustave Le Bon noted that all the countries of Latin America had constitutions virtually identical to that of the United States, but that none of the governments of these countries resembled the government of the United States in practice. Le Bon attributed this difference to hereditary differences in racial character between the primarily European population of the United States and the predominantly mestizo or Amerindian populations of Latin America. It is interesting to note that the few Latin American nations with a comparable degree of freedom and cultural advancement to the United States are precisely those nations with a largely European-derived population. The Declaration of Independence, however, with its enshrinement of Judaic equalitarian dogma, has been a millstone around the neck of the American people. It has provided powerful rhetorical ammunition for equalitarian dogmatists. Yet, since it is one of the founding documents of the United States, the average American does not feel that it would be safe to state what he knows perfectly well, that the words of the Declaration are obviously not literally true. Thus, the average American and the average patriot is intimidated into endorsing the fundamental premise of the New World Order. All men are created equal. Now let us examine the roots of the New World Order. In his The English Revolution, William Gailey Simpson tells us, quote, "In the reign of Charles I, King of England from 1625 till he was beheaded in 1649, the Jews had already been outlawed from English shores for about 350 years. Driven out of Spain by Ferdinand and Isabella in 1492, many of them swarmed into Holland, where they soon made Amsterdam the financial capital of the world. Meanwhile, England, without any Jews, had prospered mightily, had come to be known as Merry England, had produced Shakespeare and the Elizabethan Age, and had destroyed the Spanish Armada, and by the time of Charles I was showing signs of that expanding vitality that was to make her the greatest empire builder in all history. This caused the Dutch Jews to lust for readmission to English soil. No animal makes so desirable a host for parasites as one that is healthy and growing. Cromwell came into a collision with the king that developed into civil war. He required money and all things needful for his army. The Jews agreed to be his suppliers, on condition that, should he come out on top, he would have the ban against them lifted. In a few years, the king's head rolled, and Jews, largely from Holland, swarmed in under the protection of the revolutionary Commonwealth. Within two generations, they became the dominant financial power in the land, and the Bank of England was set up, which, with its acknowledged privilege of enjoying the interest on all monies which it creates out of nothing, as they said, became the model for all the central banking systems with which the Western world was gradually saddled. Close quote. The New World Order experienced a temporary setback with the restoration of the Stuart dynasty. But the Jews solved this problem in 1688 by financing the power grab of a stooge known as William of Orange. William of Orange was the first in that multitude of mere figureheads on the English throne. Rabbi Moses Margoliouth boasted that, quote, "A monarch reigned who was indebted to Hebrew gold for his royal diadem," close quote. An early milestone of the New World Order was the French Revolution, the overthrow of the French monarchy. This monarchy and the causes of its downfall have been widely and deliberately misrepresented. The truth about the French monarchy was stated by the Scottish philosopher David Hume in 1742, quote, "Though all kinds of government be improved in modern times, yet monarchical government seems to have made the greatest advance to perfection. It may now be affirmed of civilized monarchies what was formerly said of republics alone, that they are a government of laws, not of men. They are susceptible of order, method, and constancy to a surprising degree. Property is there secure. Industry is encouraged, the arts flourish, and the prince lives among his subjects like a father among his children." Close quote. Hume added that he saw more sources of degeneracy in representative republics like that of England than in France, which he called the most perfect model of pure monarchy. It is generally conceded that a conspiracy orchestrated the French Revolution. The moderate members of the conspiracy, such as Lafayette, were appalled at the outcome of the process they had helped to start. Lafayette and many other Freemasons had merely wanted to establish a constitutional monarchy, but, as in all revolutions, the moderates did not determine the outcome. It was the Grand Orient Lodge of Freemasonry, notorious for being Jewish-controlled, which horrified Europe by ordering that Louis XVI be executed. The Gentile figurehead of Grand Orient Freemasonry was the Duc d'Orléans, a cowardly and self-indulgent man who was putty in Jewish hands. The Duke's handler was Coderlos de Laclos, a crypto-Jew who played much the same role as Edward Mandel House did to Woodrow Wilson. It is common knowledge that Grand Orient Freemasonry and quasi-Masonic secret societies such as Adam Weishaupt's Order of Illuminati had an important role in making the French Revolution happen. The much more crucial fact, however, which receives much less attention, is that the Jews were behind all of these groups. On page 166 of Secret Societies and Subversive Movements, Nesta Webster states, quote, "Beneath all these occult sects, one common source of inspiration is to be found, the perverted and magical Kabbalah of the Jews, that conglomeration of wild theosophical imaginings and barbaric superstitions founded on ancient pagan cults and added to throughout 17 centuries by succeeding generations of Jewish occultists." Close quote. We may note in passing the continuing Jewish involvement in New Age cults, all of which, for some reason or other, seem to have equality and brotherhood and one world as central themes. The credulous followers of these cults are thus hoodwinked, like the Masons, into advancing the Jewish agenda in the name of a spurious humanitarianism, with a large or small helping of spiritual gobbledygook. The Jewish involvement in the French Revolution was not only doctrinal, but personal. Aside from Delaclos, a number of the directors of the conspiracy, the Comte de Cagliostro, the Comte de Saint-Germain, and Martin Pasquale, were Jews who concealed their identity at the time, but have since been exposed. The more well-known books on the subject overlook this crucial Jewish factor. But the Abbé Berouel, after publishing his book exposing the Masonic hand in the French Revolution, received a letter dated August 1, 1806, from one Jean-Baptiste Simonini. This letter is summarized by H. A. Gwynne in his The Cause of World Unrest as follows, quote, Simonini informs the Abbé that his conclusions are correct but do not go far enough, and that behind the Masons were the Jews. He goes on to tell how during the Revolution he was at Piedmont, and for his own safety contrived to persuade certain Jews who were active in the Revolution that he was himself a Jew by descent. They induced him to become a Mason and told him, when he had thoroughly won their confidence, that Maues and the Old Man of the Mountains were Jews, that the Freemasons and the Illuminae were founded by Jews, that all anti-Christian sects emanated from them, that they had many partisans within the church, both in Italy and Spain, that the Bourbons were their hereditary enemies, that they had made themselves masters of Christian wealth, which they were using to promote revolution, and that they promised themselves, in less than a century, to be masters of the world, to abolish all other sects, themselves to become the rulers, to make synagogues of the Christian churches, and to reduce the Christian peoples to a state of slavery. Close quote. This letter was placed in church archives, where it remains to this day. You have been listening to part 3 of Scott Spencer's The History and Significance of the New World Order. We will continue this series on my next program, in which we will conclude our study of the Jewish involvement in the French Revolution and explore the part played by abolitionism and communism in setting the stage for today's New World Order. This important series will also appear, as do most of our American Dissident Voices broadcasts, in our monthly illustrated newsletter, Free Speech. Free Speech is the monthly publication for supporters of this truth-telling radio program, and a 12-issue, one-year subscription is yours for a donation of only $40 or more. Free Speech subscribers not only receive American Dissident Voices articles in permanent, illustrated, printed form every month, but they also receive substantial discounts on books, audio cassettes, and videotapes published by National Vanguard Books, discounts that are normally available only to book dealers. Most important of all, Free Speech subscribers have the satisfaction of knowing that they are doing something about the problems that beset our nation. Your subscription helps to purchase expensive radio time and sends our message of patriotic resistance to hundreds of thousands of listeners every week. A donation of $300 or more will place you on our list of defenders of the First Amendment, who receive, in addition to free speech, a weekly cassette recording of every American Dissident Voices broadcast, exactly as transmitted over our radio and satellite network. No one is doing what we are doing on the airwaves. Support our efforts and send $40 or more today to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA. That's National Vanguard Books, Department R, as in radio, P.O. Box 90, that's 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA. Send $40 or more and ask for a subscription to free speech. International listeners may send an international postal money order or international reply coupons. Until next time, this is Kevin Alfred Strom reminding you that equal men are not free.
You've been listening to American Dissident Voices,
a beacon of truth for patriotic Americans and for patriots of our Western civilization around the world.
American Dissident Voices depends upon the voluntary support of its listeners to stay on the air.
Please send the largest gift you can afford today.
Send $1 for our book and tape catalog listing over 300 titles that the controlled media don't want you to see.
Our overseas listeners can substitute 2 international reply coupons for the $1. For a gift of $12 or more, you can receive a high-fidelity cassette recording of today's program.
Please give us the call letters of this station, the subject of the program, and today's date.
Write to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
That's National Vanguard Books, Department R, Post Office Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
That's National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
And until the next broadcast, this is Richard Cotton reminding you, as always, freedom is not free, free men are not equal, and equal men are not free.
This program is pre-recorded and comes to you from the United States of America.